Hello and welcome to this Critical Eye Asia Leadership Podcast, Inspiring Leaders to Succeed. I'm Michael Crompton, General Manager of Critical Eye Asia, based in Hong Kong. This podcast is part of Critical Eye Asia's podcast series, where we will be covering APAC mentoring insights and having a focus on fostering a collaborative community for our leaders, sharing practical advice and insights, as well as a discussion on effective mentorship and the dynamics of these crucial relationships. In today's episode, we delve into the world of executive leadership mentoring with a seasoned executive, Dan Cotton, who's based here in the vibrant Asia-Pacific region. Dan brings a wealth of experience, having served not only as a mentor, but also benefited from mentorship throughout his illustrious career. So join us as we explore the art of guiding emerging leaders, the transformative power of mentorship, and the invaluable lessons learned from both sides of the mentor-mentee relationship. Dan, welcome to this Critical Eye podcast. Thank you for joining us. And I wonder if you could give us a bit of a background and profile on yourself before we start with the questions.
Great. Michael, thank you very much for having me. So I'm Dan Cotton. I'm the president of a company called Flywheel Digital in APAC. Flywheel is a new division of Omnicom, recently acquired, and with the mission to provide simplified digital commerce solutions for a very complex world. Put very simply, we give brands intelligence and tools and expertise to outperform on the world's most important digital retail platforms. My background in Asia is I built this business through M&A for the company. I've been in Asia for 15 years, and my career has been focused on technology, e-commerce, and fashion trend forecasting, and with a grounding from the Boston Consulting Group in London. I'm also a member of the Critical Eye Network, as Michael said, and a very happy mentee within that organization.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan, for that intro. So moving on to some questions for you, and really looking at the recent activity within your industry and with Flywheel Digital in particular. So, you know, looking at navigating this transition from some very fast-paced, maybe smaller-sized businesses to a very large one, US-based, likely going to have more layers of complexity. How do you approach structuring, acquiring and mentoring of high-performing talent who may well be resistant to traditional management structures?
Yeah, I will relate this to the quite unique experience of building Flywheel Digital. I mean, we are uniquely positioned as a global supplier in this particular industry, and we've done it through a very bold investment of 11 acquisitions globally, four of those in Asia Pacific, which I made. It's a very bold way to build a company quickly. It obviously gives you the ability to acquire a huge amount of talent, expertise, and technology fast. But with that comes a huge amount of challenge. So I'm going to relate the answer to my experience of building that business right across Asia Pacific through the acquisition of fast-growing startups. But I think the principles also relate, at least in my view, to the changing nature of business disciplines in general, right? Business disciplines, I think, are becoming more focused, more pervasive, particularly with things like technology, data, AI becoming pervasive everywhere. And that just brings us to the question as leaders of how do we include that top talent in our organization successfully, because our traditional management styles just may not work. So I am a mentor, right? And I run mentoring through structured programs within my organizations. And in general, I would subscribe to the belief that mixing mentoring with aligned management isn't great because it causes confusion. But I also think as leaders, we're all pretty familiar with the idea of managing through influence as opposed to managing through direction. But I believe that that spectrum has extended recently quite dramatically into managing as a mentor in more and more cases. And that's actually what I wanted to talk about in my experience of acquiring this top talent in a tech-based industry.
What, just kind of just quick interject that, why has that been exaggerated or accelerated, or why has that changed recently, do you think?
Because I think the advent of certain disciplines, technology is broad in itself, right? Because within technology, we have AI, we have data acquisition and management, we have product development. I think these disciplines are relatively new and they've extremely focused. And so the talent for those new disciplines is generally young, new, and the level of expertise, the amount of knowledge, the pace of change is very, very fast. And that means, I think, you know, as leaders, we have to really flex our muscles about how do we incorporate those types of people into our companies effectively.
I totally agree. I think another thing you mentioned, that pace of change is a topic, definitely something to bear in mind as we're thinking about how you manage and lead mentor talent throughout the business. So anything more to add on point, Dan?
But I think I'd perhaps go back to just talking about the challenge that I faced as I, you know, acquired those businesses to answer your question, right? Because I think, you know, finding a business itself is quite challenging. Progressing a transaction is challenging, but actually the challenge really starts to accelerate when I was trying to figure out how I was going to manage the founders and managers of these business groups and their top talent. Because frankly, they didn't need me. They don't need my help to run their business. And in fact, they don't particularly want me meddling in their business or indeed meddling with their staff. And we made our acquisitions in general through earnout structures. It's quite a common structure, which means those people are razor focused on ignoring anything from the mothership that's going to in any way hinder them from maxing out their earnout. And so some tension is inevitable, and it might sway on the one end from quite healthy tension to the other end, quite toxic tension. But in any case, you know, you're either faced there with a relationship of lip service, you know, it's a line manager, but, you know, no one really cares about it. Or you manage to create a relationship where you're adding value and it, you know, you find a way to run that in a way that's effective for you both. And what I uncovered for myself was the mode of management that worked for me was mentorship. And I found it the most effective for a few reasons. And that is that mentorship only works if you're adding value quickly to the other party, because if you're not, it's a pointless conversation and everybody knows it. Secondly, as a mentor, you're focused on understanding the other person's concerns and helping them address them. You're not focused on your own. And the third is that, you know, once you've got the trust from doing the first two, you earn the right to offer alternative ideas that might help them achieve what they want to achieve more efficiently. For me, it was following that kind of mentorship that enabled me to demonstrate that I could add value to what they're doing. And that in turn created a sort of relationship of trust and one in which I could be a line manager without causing the kind of unnecessary conflicts.
So you're highlighting to the mentee the need for mentoring and what they can benefit from it, rather than, look, this is something that we've prescribed you, here's your medicine, and you're going to enjoy it. Why would I want to be mentored, and what value can I get from it? And then you're right, I think it then becomes an interesting relationship as well, and one that people react to, respond to well, and seek out more of, I guess. On that note, and from your own, maybe switching sides a little bit to you being a mentee, if you can reflect on times that you've received mentoring, whether that's formal or informal, how can you recommend that one can actively identify and leverage opportunities for growth and advancement? So I guess the role of mentorship in your career journey, maybe some examples from that would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think you probably start to pick up a bit of a theme from me here, which is that I think mentoring is in more places than we tend to think about it. It's not just in that structured box that we usually put in. You know, she's my mentor, and when I speak to her, it's mentoring, and that's when it happens. I just don't think that's where mentoring belongs anymore. It's much more fluid. It's been a critical part of my development at work and in my hobbies that I've really worked to master. So becoming a portrait photographer that people pay for, but learning Thai boxing so I could compete in Thailand in my 30s, or the things I've done in my career. When I'm trying to progress in something I care about, I will actively seek out a small number of people to and engage them on official mentoring. You know, right now, as you already said, I'm undergoing mentoring with Critical Eye because I'm going through a kind of midterm career transition plan, right? I'm not trying to do anything today, but over the coming 4 or 5 years, I want to shift to more non-exec direct roles, potentially a shift of location. You know, I've a family that is growing up, and so I need to plan out the next phase of my career as I turn 50. So my mentor at Critical Eye is a vital part of that internal dialogue, bringing their own experience, challenge, and discipline to my thinking. So I can't recommend doing that enough, but that's all kind of common. I also think, though, that mentorship is available in many, many conversations and can be a part of a relationship you have with somebody. It doesn't have to be in a box. But what's more important is, the most important thing I've learned is that if you focus on yourself as being a mentee rather than who's your mentor, right? What does being a mentee mean? Usually you want to be a mentee when you're trying to figure something out. So if you focus then on what you're trying to figure out, you can plan what being an effective mentee means for you. Part of that might mean I am going to get a mentor and have a formal mentoring relationship. And part of it might be I'm going to actively plan out other conversations or contacts which will give me pockets of very important mentoring so that I can acquire input, challenge, debate to help me figure out this challenge that I'm facing. And I think for me, Probably the most important thing I've learned as being a mentee is being proactive as a mentee, not turning up for your mentor, but being proactive and planning out being a mentee.
That's hugely interesting and very practical, I think, advice for some of our members out there. You've answered a sort of question on the how. I'm interested in going off script slightly here on the who. How do you filter the advice? So if you're open to being mentored in all its aspects and different ways you might receive that, how do you filter out the advice or the mentoring you get? What's right for you? What works for you? And who's the expert in these areas? I mean, it's something that can take time. There's also an element of you need to know and be efficient in that, I guess.
It's really, really important. And, you know, I think the benefit of having a structured mentoring relationship is that you know that your mentor is 100% focused on you. That's a massive benefit. When you're perhaps going broader for your mentoring, for me, the first point is this conversation, or when I'm trying to extract some mentoring, is this conversation focused on the thing that I am trying to solve? If it's not really focused on that, then for me, that falls into the kind of, that's general information and it might be interesting or useful, but it's not actually focused on me and my problem. So that's an important distinction for me. So if a conversation is directly addressing the concern I have, right, in a way which is open and helpful, that for me is a mentoring conversation. The second part then is it useful or helpful? And that for me is, well, you need to collect quite a few conversations before you can figure out which ones are most useful and pertinent to you and which ones resonate. Just as in fact, when you're selecting your mentor, your formal mentor, you might speak to a few individuals before you figure out the one who's going to be talking to you in a way that works for you. But for me, the critical part is that conversation focused on helping me solve my problem? And I know that is very self-centered, but actually as a mentee, that's exactly what you're doing.
Absolutely. I think that you have to be, otherwise it can be a nice conversation. This to be, I mean, busy, especially busy executives, it's time constrained as well at the best of times. So I think that's absolutely the focus you need to have. And of course, with these conversations, you're going to be giving back to the mentor as well, knowingly or unknowingly. It should be a conversation that's two-way. So it's not purely one-sided, but I absolutely get where you're coming from.
Let me jump in there quickly, Michael, because, you know, I think going back to the first conversation we were having about working with the founders and, you know, even the next level down of talent in those organizations, you know, I found that experience deeply humbling. And with all mentoring, I think you learn a lot because your mentees feedback to you and they're giving you all sorts of stimulus that, or aspects that you wouldn't necessarily consider. But particularly when you're managing, you know, or trying to guide or help someone who's very talented and extremely knowledgeable in a discipline that you don't know, the opportunity for you to learn as you're trying to help that individual is immense. I don't just mean technical learning. I mean just flexing the muscle of how do you help somebody who's already really talented or what they're doing. So I think I found it both a very humbling and really rewarding experience.
I think your comments there make me reflect on a previous podcast my colleague Charlie did with one of our other mentors. There's a bit around the emotion there with founders, you know, founding partners, and that comes into it as well. And learning how to manage and mentor that as well is a really key skill, I think. So very useful insights. I just want to focus really on a bit around the region and some of the our members that are based in the region who have, I guess, overseas parent companies or HQs. So being a regional leader based away from that corporate HQ, I think there's an opportunity to mentor either the company or the board, the trusted advisor on the ground. You understand the company's strategic goals, its culture, very important, as well as obviously the region that you're operating in. So you can translate that into practical updates and advice for the broader strategy. First of all, do you agree with that? And if so, hopefully, do you have any examples of it? Any challenges you might have encountered? Any, I guess, expected or unexpected outcomes that can come from that?
Yeah, I do have some examples of it and experience of it. And I mean, I think just to ground why this is important and interesting to leaders of a region or indeed of a discipline area that's less understood. That's what APAC might be in this context, right? It's a discipline, you know, running a collection of quite disparate markets. That is an expertise that can easily be less understood by an international HQ. But every regional leader I know, as an example, has experiences of frustration when their HQs make decisions based on information or opinion that's not accurate or it's out of context. The first 3 to 6 months of COVID are the most poignant, recent, and common example of that. And every regional leader will resonate with that statement, I'm sure. misunderstanding risks or effective business practices in China are another very common example. So I think, you know, as the owner of an expertise, you know, and having access to firsthand knowledge or better information, the question really is how you can avoid those frustrations and possible conflicts or stalling of business and turn that into a position of value and enable your HQ actually to feel and to be better, to feel and to be smarter or better equipped. And that's what I've, you know, traditionally called central, and in my current role, flywheel, as mentoring the organization.
Really useful and very pertinent insight. Do you want to just expand on maybe an example of how you've done that specifically?
Yeah, so I think I was very lucky at Essential in that I had the senior exec and the board very curious, right? They were both concerned to invest in China, but very interested in investing in China, and they were curious. What I did in that situation was I took a very proactive role in gathering information and sharing it and bringing stakeholders inside. And the purpose of me gathering and sharing that information was to provide different aspects to the same conversations or the same topics that they would be reading about or analyzing from London or the, you know, or New York. What that resulted in was numerous projects that we ran, including, you know, we had a slot every year at the board where we did nothing but talk about a macro situation in China, not our businesses, but the macro situation in China. What is going on in government? How is the government structured? How does it interoperate with business and education? How is that changing? What are the policy priorities at the moment? And how do they relate with our business strategy? Is our business strategy relevant or not? Is it in conflict or not? So we would spend a lot of time talking about those things, and we did it in order to pique curiosity and to give background context and understanding. We also ran learning sessions for senior execs to come and spend time in China and to meet people in China, not necessarily just doing business. Obviously, we did business as well, but we had periods of time where it was just about learning and exploring. And I found that invaluable because what it does is it separates for the headquarter leaders learning about the region. It separates that from taking decisions about the region. And that's important because if you try to do both at the same time, if you're in a conversation with HQ and you're trying to educate them about a certain context at the same time as trying to make a difficult decision, you can guarantee it's not going to work. So separating is really important. And in order to do that, you need a bit of planning and dedicated effort to help your HQ, you know, improve their understanding and hopefully improve their curiosity about your region.
Excellent. A really practical advice, Dan. And we're through those questions and the topic in very quick time. I'd like to thank you for your insights and really appreciate there are some practical takeaways that people can get from this podcast. You're obviously passionate about the region and have some lots to share. We'll be taking that forward within our conversations as we progress throughout the year. But for now, thank you, Dan, for joining us and for sharing your insight and experience on mentoring, and look forward to catching up with you soon. And thank you for listening, and appreciate the time. I look forward to engaging with our members and mentors as the year continues. Thank you very much.